All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Thank you for joining us, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves here. If you're watching on YouTube, I just said I feel like Beauty and the Beast, and you can see why. Tim looks great.
Not all so I did good was, over here. I'm usually wearing a hat. Instead, I just ran a comb through my hair. Nothing else different about me. But thank you. I appreciate it.
I visibly can see how attractive you are.
That's how it works.
Yeah. That's how it works. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. I appreciate you being here. So does Tim. We're going to have a good one today. But before we get into all the fun stuff, we got to get the ads out of the way. So this episode is brought to you by Bet365, proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. Open an account with Bet365 today and bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the time, whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HockeyCA. I don't know why, but use code HockeyCA. You don't get anything. Use that code, right? Or do you get anything, Tim?
Only way to find out is if you use the code.
You support us, and we need it in a big way. Actually, we're okay. But thank you for joining us, everybody. Let's get into it. Breaking news, Tim. Just broke. I saw this, too. North Carolina, very strange move. You very rarely see a GM in any sports, whether it's NFL, NBA, MLB, just resign. Step down. Usually you have to be just torn away from your desk. You're fired. Leave. Nobody wants you here. Beat it, nerd. Don Waddell for the Carolina Hurricanes said, "That's enough. I've had enough. I'm leaving. I resign." Shocking, Tim. Being in North Carolina, you probably broke the news first.
Well, the whole city is abuzz about it. So, yeah, this is it's rippling through the airwaves. And I don't have a ton of information just because it literally just broke an hour ago. And I'm just reading the same articles that everyone else is reading. But he basically said, "I spoke with the owner this morning and told him it's time for me to move on to my next chapter. I love my time here, et cetera, et cetera." So Eric Tulski is the assistant GM. He's going to take over in an interim role until a permanent replacement is found. So Tulski probably just doesn't have the experience yet or the skill set to do the big job. But Waddell has been a good GM. Like, I'm reading the article here.
Fantastic, where they
missed the playoffs for 9 years, and then they've made it 6 years straight since he took over and drafted a lot of the core players that you've got on this team now. He's made some good trades. He's the guy that's not afraid to make the big move with Jane Getzel just, 2 months ago. So good GM. I wonder if he's looking at other jobs or if he wants to just take the year off. I think we'll see in the next few weeks.
And he's a GM who doesn't overpay. He seems to be very smart with his money, draft picks. He really values having those assets in his wallet. Even the Jane Getzel trade, he gave up a second and a fifth and a couple prospects. So not just decimating your future, trying to go out and get an impact player. So he did really well, and he wasn't a guy who overpaid. Got rid of Jake Gardner when he was at his peak, got rid of
D'Angelo.
Justin Falk at his peak. But it's like big name defensemen, because they had the plethora of defensemen, and they, instead of re-signing him, he trades him. He's like, okay, go elsewhere. And so he hasn't really locked in that big deal other than Sebastian Aho, but he did actually match. The offer sheet was more of a spiteful offer sheet to the Montreal Canadiens. So he's got a little bit of a anger streak to him.
You know what's funny, though? We talked about this the other day, that the Canes have a very difficult and pivotal offseason with all the expiring contracts. The UFAs, Gensel, Martinook, Nosin, Teravainen, Chatfield, D'Angelo, Preshi, Shea. That's like the core of their team, practically. Not to mention RFAs, Seth Jarvis, and Martin Nietzsche. So this is like not an easy summer, and I'm wondering if he's just like rubbing his temples going, oh, man, this looks really hard. I think this is a good time for me to hand the reins to somebody else, because this is... That's the kind of summer that makes and breaks jobs and careers if you're a GM.
Yeah, and he's not a spring chicken. The guy's old. He's been around the block, and he's done a good job in Carolina. Do you see him, and not that we know much about GMs or anything, but he resigns from Carolina. Any chance he ties on with a different team? Maybe a team with a bigger pocketbook, because Carolina's never been known to spend. Always conservative. Is that in his future?
I think he'll get the calls. I mean, look at Kyle Dubas got a job right away. Sheldon Keefe got a job right away as far as coaching goes. Like the teams know that it's the boys club, it's the talent and the experience. He's got both. So I think people are definitely interested. Whether he wants it or not is a different question.
Yeah. What this does is slows down the process in Carolina a little bit. You know, we're vastly approaching the draft. It's next month. Then after that, you get into free agency. Then you get into the season. So if you don't have a GM in place, a lot of deals happen around the draft, a lot of RFAs sitting there twiddling their thumbs, a lot of UFAs. What's going to happen? If I'm Martin Nikas and Seth Jarvis, who do I negotiate with? Who's the guy? Teams are already swarming on, is it Nikas or Nikas? Nachos? I don't know. Teams are swarming. He's already being, you know, suited after by Calgary's kicking the tires, Montreal, Philly, Nashville, San Jose, and the Utah nothing. Like, they're all interested in this kid, and why wouldn't you be? He's a stud. Played very well in the playoffs. Young kid. Get him for next to nothing, probably, from Carolina, and now they don't have a GM. But interesting turn of events here. Do you think maybe he got nudged out the door a little bit? Like, he's been there quite a long time. They really haven't got to the Stanley Cup. They were close a few times, but took a step backward this year. No? Yeah?
I don't know. It's hard to say. He's got a good track record. He's a guy that I trust. And I don't think that the Canes' lack of success is on him. He's given them a chance to win with their roster makeup and the moves they made and the contracts they've signed. It's on the players and Brindamore more than it would be on him. So,
yeah, I agree. Interesting turn of events. We'll see how it turns out in Carolina. But like you said, very pivotal offseason for them. They got to spend a lot of money if they're going to compete like they did this year. Because the team that beat them, the New York Rangers, they spend in the cap. They go all in. They know this is their window. They have some star players. They're not going to ruin the star goaltender's prime like they did with Henrik Lundqvist for years and years. People saying, we got a great goalie. We got to add. We got to do this. We got to do that. They're doing it now. They're adding pieces. They have star forward, star defenseman, star goaltender. They played game one on Friday. Or when did they play, Tim? Wednesday? Today's Wednesday. Friday. I'm all out of whack. They played it on Wednesday against the Florida Panthers. When does the series begin? When does it begin?
When the home team loses.
Well, both of these series have begun because game one happened for the Florida Panthers and New York Rangers in Florida. Looked pretty good. Looked pretty damn good. And the Rangers, usually just creative, electric offense that just zipping passes all over the ice, looked slow. Looked like it was struggling. Looked like they were out of sorts at times. A usually aggressive Artem Panarin. Lots of stop-ups. Lots of trying to find the third guy, the fourth guy, because you can't get to the net. Didn't really work. Directly led to a goal for the Florida Panthers. But what did you think of this game? Shocking? Or what?
Yeah, surprising for sure. Because the Rangers are, what, 8-1 in the playoffs? If they swept and then they went 5-1. Like, they're flying high. They're playing game one at home at MSG. Like, the crowd's full. They're feeling good. They're feeling cocky. And Florida just punched them in the nose from the first shift and didn't let up. I mean, they suffocated the Rangers. Very high intensity. The forecheck was relentless. They were forcing turnovers. They were very tough to get through in the neutral zone. They were clearing their own zone quickly, not letting Rangers getting anything sustained going. And it just frustrated the hell out of the Rangers. And then you get to Tkachuk's, first of all, his big hit on Trocheck. He had a couple of big hits on his first two shifts. And he scores that goal that looked a little bit soft, but it was through some guys that Shesterkin never saw. But from that moment on, toward the end of the first period, it looked like the air was just sucked out of the garden. And it was pretty quiet in that building for most of the rest of that game. And it was just Florida from pretty much that point on.
Well, you talk about big players and big moments and stepping up and really seizing the opportunity. And we talked about it last show. Like, if there's ever a chance, an Ison Shea only chance for the Florida Panthers to win this series, but it's Matthew Tkachuk. This guy performs. He shows up. He showed it last year. He showed it in Calgary when he was playing there. This guy loves the moment. And he comes out, and he's not scoring highlight reel goals. I think Shesterkin should have had that one. That's a gimme. He just misses it with his glove. But it's the other stuff he does. He's burying people. Like, he's in on every play. He's energetic. He just brings so much to every single game. He's not one-dimensional. He does a little bit of everything, and that's why he's so valuable. People say, well, why do you pay him this much money? Why do you pay his brother Brady Tkachuk this much money? It's not about goals and assists. If it was, Austin Matthews would be the best player on the planet. He's not, because he doesn't do everything. That's why Matthew Tkachuk is so valuable to a coach and a team, is because he does everything. Want to get into this series at Madison Square Garden? Bury somebody. Impact hit. How quiet was MSG, Tim?
It was very quiet. And it's funny, I think I said on Wednesday's show, Tkachuk was relatively quiet.
Yeah.
For him. You know, he's still a very much an impact player, drawing penalties, getting his points, but not the same way that we saw earlier last playoffs. But this game, if it's any indication of how he plays the rest of the way, and he is a guy that wants the big stage, he wants the bright lights, he gets better as the playoffs go on, and he showed that on Wednesday night. And I expect we'll see that again from him in game two.
Yeah, the Rangers should have better, but lo and behold, there was, as we've seen throughout this playoffs, if I want to critique the referees for one thing, the goaltender interference penalties that have been called this offseason, this postseason, I should say, it leaves a lot to be desired. Not consistent. You never know how it's going to go. A call gets disallowed on the ice. It goes up to Toronto and up into the atmosphere. No one knows where it goes. You have no clue which way it's going to go, because we've seen goals throughout this playoffs. The Bruins, Swayman, crazy upset Sam Bennett right on his doorstep. We've seen that go so many different ways this offseason, and it happened again. Matthew Tkachuk gets the first goal. They're pressuring the New York Rangers. My buddy, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, gets the puck at the point, throws it at the net, in the net. Lo and behold, no. Ryan Lomberg got nudged. He got encouraged into Igor Shesterkin, and you don't have to encourage Lomberg much. And so he went with it. He takes him out of the play. No goal. They went to the situation room. No goal. Does it annoy you, Tim, as a Bruins fan, to see that called no goal? Because it's very similar to the Bennett-Swayman situation. Almost less contact. And that one was called no goal. Bennett, more contact, called a good goal.
Yeah, they even said it on the broadcast. Like, if you're a Bruins fan, you're watching this very closely, because Charlie Coyle was just shoved from behind into his own goalie by Bennett. I think the way they explained it was that Lomberg was in the crease already, then he was hit. And I guess, like, maybe that's fine. But it is, like, you should be able to look at a play, and we should all agree whether it's a goal or no goal. And there's just no way to know. Like, even the broadcasters and the Bruins won in this one, they're like, oh, we're surprised by that. And they bring in, was it Dave Jackson, the referee on the broadcast that they have? The retired guy, and he's just like, he's wrong half the time too. Or he just talks and talks and fills the air until the ruling comes through, right? And then he's like, and here's why. It's like, we should know. You know, the retired ref should know. So it is a little frustrating, but didn't end up really mattering in this game.
Well, you always want the human aspect. You look at it at baseball, they're going to get the robots to call the strike zone. In hockey, they bring in the replay, so that's supposed to take care of all of this, and it just makes it worse. It makes it harder to wrap your head around when you give more time to look at a situation, you have more time to see, okay, that guy's here, this guy's pushing him, and you still blow the call, it seems like. And maybe it's because more people get to see the inside of the workings of the machine, where it's like, okay, I get a slow down view. I can see what the ref's seeing, and you have a completely different opinion, and you just have more time to dwell on it. So I don't know. I thought it was a no goal. He's in him. He took his leg. Shesterkin was out of position because of Lomberg. But again, you go back to the Bruins game. That could have easily been a no goal. And that changes just the whole complexity, the whole turnout of the series. Maybe the Bruins make the third round. And, you know, this is a moot point. But it's just very funny. Moving on. Bigger story. Sergei Bobrovsky playing well, the defense playing well, or the Rangers just not scoring? Other than Lafreniere on his own net.
Yeah, well, the Rangers had multiple breakaways on this, and It wasn't like their typical guys, because one of them was Schneider, the defenseman, the other one, I forget who it was, Cooley maybe. And so, like, you know, I tweeted out, like, if I was on the Rangers, I would simply score on a breakaway. Like, you've got to take advantage of those opportunities because Florida's not going to give them to you. But you didn't really, like, Max Schneider hit the post.
Yep.
That is what it is. The other guy probably had room to do a little bit more, and he didn't. He just put it right into Bobrovsky's pad. And so there are the Rangers do have to be better. But most of the credit goes to Florida, just the way they played. And everyone's talking about, including you, Gustav Forsling. Oof. The plays that he's making, he's their best defenseman right now. Offensively, defensively, like, he's noticeable every time he steps on the ice, and he's just, the Rangers didn't have an answer for it. So will they in game two tonight? They better, because they cannot go down to Florida down 2-0 in the series.
Yeah, they really do need to get a win. It's not like the Rangers played terribly. Like, right. They gave up one goal, the Tkachuk goal, really, because Lafreniere was their own goal, and then you gave up an empty netter. They didn't play too good. You know, they didn't look like they were confident. Their power play 0-2, only two chances. Every prediction we made was just garbage. 3-0 game. It wasn't a high offensive game. It was very tentative. Both series, I think it was a feeling out process in game one. Sloppy games, trying to be physical, trying not to make many mistakes, and it ends up just being just an okay game. I don't think any of the four teams in the finals, East and West, are happy with how they played in game one. Even Florida. Like, I don't think you can go and do video and go, oh, we did great. This is a great game for us. No, you have a lot more. They were 0-3 in the power play. They didn't put many shots on the net. The goalies played well. I think on both sides. Edmonton, yep. Dallas, here in Florida, New York. I think all the goalies played well. Shesterkin was solid. Other than that, I don't know. Lots to work on here in this series. You mentioned they played tonight, Tim. What do you see? Do you see all in the same? Do you see the Rangers putting forth a better effort? How do you... Well, basically, whoever you pick will lose. So what's your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be any easier for Rangers in game two. I don't think we're going to see the bounce back where it's like swings 3-0 their way. You know what I mean? I just don't think Florida plays that way. But I think you probably get some more opportunities. You bury some of the ones you have that you didn't bury in game one. And maybe it's 2-1, 3-2 Rangers this time. And then you tie it up going down south.
You think the Rangers will take it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. I feel like they're due. They were 8-2 going into this game. Now they're 8-3. I wanted to correct you, but you were on a good run. I didn't want to stop you because Carolina won two games in the second round. I don't want to correct you on it, but I know our listeners will come back and they'll ruthlessly mock you. So let's just get it before they can get to you.
We got to get our facts straight. They'll let us know.
Oh, they do. They're awful. But they keep us honest. You know what I mean? Better be called out than live a lie. We just had a call. Anyways. I'm not gonna air my dirty laundry on this show. But I agree. I think the Rangers tied up. Both series, Tim, going to seven. I feel like we're going to split the first four. And it's a best of three. I love that. All right, moving west. Edmonton, Dallas. This is a late night for the big guy. There's a reason my hat's backward. There's a reason I look like the beast. Disheveled. And should I get into what happened with my house? Do the people want to know that? How just frustrating my day's been?
Give us a minute on it.
Okay, so we're finally building a house. After years of just him and hawing, the prices are going to go down. The prices are going to go down. You haven't gone down. Everything's still high. And my wife just said, hey, dum-dum, baby number 8 is coming in 2 months. We need a house that's bigger than 1,200 square feet to jam these kids. You got them sleeping on top of the closets, for Pete's sake. Like, let's go. We can't have 5 kids in a room, Tim. I think it's illegal. So we finally started the house build. The excavators have the plans. Hopefully he doesn't listen to the show. If he does, he's going to be upset. They start digging. Here we go. Day 2, Tim. They've been there 2 days. So our driveway, you got to go a long way to get to the house. So I'm like, just go straight through the pricklers. And then you take a right and you go up the hill. You're in the meadow. You're in the grassy area. Do not go through the forest. What do you think these guys do? What do you think they do? They get halfway to the prickler bushes, which is probably 200, 300 feet, maybe 400. And then they just call an audible. And like, so he said, go straight. Nah, I'm going right. Right through the forest. So instead of doing straight and a gradual C, kind of a bend up to my house and a little hairpin turn into the garage, he went straight, 90 degree up, 90 degree left. And I'm like, what are we doing here? So I saw it last night and I'm just frustrated. Took a 20 to 35 foot just buzzsaw through the forest. Just scorched earth down to the dirt, Tim. And I'm just like, well, you can't like just undo this. You can't just replace the trees and the ground coverage and everything that makes it just beautiful. I'm a forest guy. I like that. Tim, you're like a high rise guy. You don't like nature.
Come on.
This is appealing to some people, and he just killed it. And so I don't know what we're going to do. I went there today and we tried to figure it out, but I'm just like, you guys, come on.
You got to be killing me. Dang sure. When you're doing something like that, you have to be absolutely positive.
And they driving a bulldozer. You can't replant a tree that's been there for 50 years. Can't do it. I got firewood, though. I guess there's a silver lining. I got some firewood. But it was just a frustrating morning, so I was dealing with that. And then we have a house up in Northport. I had to go mow the grass. 3 feet high grass. How many passes do you think it takes to mow a lawn that's 3 feet high? Three.
Are you collecting the grass on that, or are you just shredding it up?
Oh, shredding it up. The renters show up today at 4 o'clock. There's going to be grass clippings. I hope they don't have kids, because they're going to come back with just pockets full of grass.
But green sneakers.
It's been a morning. So, and I was watching hockey. So I had to deal with all that after that. And so the Edmonton Oilers, Dallas Stars kicked off their series last night. Went to double overtime, just barely. Itty bitty bitty double overtime, 32 seconds into the double overtime. Connor McDavid scored. He listens to me. He said, you need to score more. And he took it to heart and he scored, Tim. The four periods before that, pretty garbage hockey. From my perspective, I am a hockey podcaster. I played professional for 10 years. If I have four teams left in the playoffs, I expect the best. I expect just fast, crisp, explosion. Let's go. It was sloppy. It was not connected. It was two teams that just didn't want to make a mistake. And because you don't want to make a mistake, you make so many mistakes. If you play with the fear in your mind, don't mess it up. Don't mess it up. Don't mess it up. You're going to mess it up. And so that's what happened in my eyes for the first four periods. Nothing crisp, no good goals. With two teams, with the amount of talent out there, you think there'd be some highlight reel plays, some passes, some power plays, some really solid plays. The best play I saw was Jake Ottinger's save. What was it in the first overtime, I believe, or maybe third period? Incredible save on who was
the
it?
Kick he got save?
His toe on it.
Yeah.
It was a Holloway, I think. Caught someone flat foot and was just a beautiful save. But other than that, both of Edmonton goals were gifts. The Dallas goal, first one was a gift for sure. The second goal was a scramble by Sagan. What did you think of this game? Did you like it?
I mean, I actually did. And here's why. Because if you're Edmonton, you think of like, well, let me preface this. If we're not Edmonton fans that don't watch them every single night, we think, okay, in order for them to win, they need points from the big guys. They're scoring beautiful goals. They're scoring on the power play. And they're trying to win by 3-4 goals. They're trying to score 4 or 5 in order to win the game, because who knows how many Skinner's going to let up. This is the game that they won. It was tight. It was close. They're scoring on the rebound. They're getting in the dirty areas. They're not like, there was nothing pretty about any of these goals on either side. And I feel like if you're Edmonton, you're encouraged by that, to win a game like that, because usually those types of games don't go their way.
Yeah.
And I know these playoffs have been a little bit different because they've beaten teams many different ways, including LA, even though they only went 5 games. They weren't all easy, right? And so I think you're encouraged by that, and you're equally discouraged by that if you're Dallas, because that's a game that you want to play. That's a game that you want to play. And there were a couple of instances like the Hyman goal where Tanev is just shaking his head. He should have taken him out of that play. And
they were Lindell. Like, both of them directly caused 2 goals. So, yeah.
And even the one where McDavid should have scored in the first overtime, which we'll talk about, I'm assuming. But Tanev should, you know... He got beat on that one, too. And so that's a game. I don't think we'll see that again from those guys. But let's talk about the goals they did score.
Yeah, let's just talk about the Edmonton goals. Because the first one, I think, is a gift. McDavid just falls on his keister behind the net. And it manages to find its way over to Leon Draisaitl back door. And he buries an empty net goal. How many times has he scored that goal this playoffs?
That's his office right there.
Every single game. It just reminds me of Brett Hall back in the day, where he would just not move from the dot. And the puck would find him. Alex Ovechkin in his prime. He would not move from that spot and the puck would find him. Draisaitl has tattooed himself in that spot this playoffs, and he scored like 8 to 10 goals. He's got a 13 game point streak. He's playing fantastic hockey. And then the second goal, another gift, another absolute gift from the Dallas Stars. You mentioned Tanev and Lindell just get crossed up, not playing really good hockey. And it's just Hyman all of a sudden finds himself alone in front of the net. And I think Ottinger went for the poke check. He should have maybe just held his ground, slips between his net. So the Edmonton Oilers get gifted a 2-0 lead. they didn't really do anything to earn it because they were playing bad in the first period. They come out 2-0 looking pretty damn good, Tim. And then the Dallas gets gifted a goal too on a turnover by Kulak. He can't figure it out in front of the net. He just, if you're in front of the net, listen up, Brett Kulak. It's game one of the Western Conference Finals. If you're in front of the net and the puck is at your feet and you have a guy on your hip, knock him, knock his ass down, right? Sagan took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 whacks at the puck, and Kulak's just like, where's the puck? Where's the puck? He's like completely oblivious to the situation. Skinner's nowhere to be found. He was playing Jamie Benn. Knock his ass down, my man. Come on. Don't play the puck in that situation.
I was just thinking the same thing. I'm glad you said that. Don't forget Kulak also created the turnover that built that opportunity. But yeah, if you're like most of our listeners have played, you know, high school, youth, whatever, college. If you make that play, if you're Kulak and you don't clear the man, he scores, and it's like a loose puck at your feet, you got to just push him out of there, right? Like it's one-on-one battle. You go back to the bench, your coach is saying one thing. You take the body next time. You take him out of that play. He didn't do it. And so I know it's a rapid, you know, bang bang play, and it's easy to criticize from the podcast couch, but definitely his fault twice, you know, in 10 seconds there, and gives Dallas life when they shouldn't have had it.
Yeah, and then they go and they score again with 3 minutes left. Tyler Seguin, kind of another gift goal, but he gets a goal. We go to overtime. And then lo and behold, Captain America, Captain Canada, Connor McDavid gets called for a double minor. Double minor, 4 minutes to start the first overtime. Game over, right? Game over. You have 4 minutes. You have the best power play guys in your team. You have all-world tipping prodigy Joe Pavelski. You have stud young guys scattered throughout the lineup. You have Miro Heiskanen, who's been dynamic this postseason. Not even really a great opportunity on this four-minute power play. Nothing really to write home about. The Edmonton Oilers skate through. They get out of the first overtime period, except for the one save. Connor McDavid gets all alone in front of the net. Takes the puck. Forehand, backhand, on his forehand. Jake Ottinger is so incredibly good. Puts his stick out. Connor McDavid, I don't know what he's thinking. Does he want a better opportunity? And I'm not going to critique this guy because he's scored like he's the best player on the planet. But what's going through his head in that moment? Does he want a better opportunity? Is he thinking Ottinger is going to dive and then you'll have a better opportunity when he's just already committed? Because it was just a strange sequence of events where he has it, takes it to his forehand, and then he waits and he even pumps it. And then Ottinger has time to come over and, you know, take time and space away and puts his stick right on his stick. And he just gets not an easy save, but he makes a nice stick save. And McDavid just, what did you, your goal score, Tim? What did you think of that?
And Tanev's stick comes in too. He has time. Yeah. You watch it frame by frame. You're like, all right, tuck it. He's got all this room and he waits and waits. And I know McDavid scored the game-winning goal, and I know he basically leads the playoffs in points, and I know he's this and that. He's still not right. Something's off with him. I don't know. We might not find out what it is till his playoffs are over, but which is scary because he's still putting up all these points even though something's either not right mentally or he's hurt or whatever. But, yeah, you've got to score that, and luckily he does redeem himself right in the beginning of the second overtime, and they win. So it was a good goal from him, and Oilers get up 1-0 early.
Again, another mistake from Tanev and Lindell. They're both behind the net. They're just chasing the puck. If you watch it, they come from behind the net. There's three Dallas Stars in a perfect line. Just all focused on Evan Bouchard. And McDavid, hello, you might want to put a stick on this guy. He's left wide alone in front, and he gets a nice pass from Bouchard, and he sucks it in behind Ottinger. Lots of mistakes in this game. Lots of things to correct. So in my eyes, Dallas played a terrible game. Their worst game of the playoffs, in my eyes, by far. Edmonton played okay, not terrible, not great. They got their star guys scored again, just like we thought they would. Sorry, Chris Knobloch, it's not going to happen. You're a two-line team. I'm okay with the Stars losing this game. They will learn their lesson. They will be better next game. In my eyes, the top two teams on either side, the Rangers and the Stars, the Rangers are in big trouble. Not big trouble. They're in a little more hot water than the Dallas Stars are. So I think Dallas will right the ship. They'll win tomorrow. It'll be a 1-1 series, and away she goes. Rangers, I think they have to be very, very, very careful tonight because Florida, you don't want to go down 2-0 to Florida. I think you can go down 2-0 to Edmonton and still be okay.
Yeah, not to mention Dallas has lost 7 straight game ones. So, like, this is they're right on track.
Par for the course.
They're right on track. They're not flipping out. They're not worried. They come back in one game two every time so
far. They lost the first two to Vegas.
They lose two. Yeah, you're right. So they're not worried. This is the group that always bounces back.
They embrace the challenge. A little bit of adversity. These guys like it. So you know what I like? Wendy's, Tim. Wendy's is delicious. You know what else I like? Frozen pucks. They're awesome. But only when they're in the back of the other guys' net. But that doesn't mean you want to eat one. That's why Wendy's only uses fresh beef, not frozen pucks. Fresh beef that's never seen the inside of a freezer in all of their burgers. Whether you order a Baconator, Dave's Single, or even a JBC, Junior Bacon Cheeseburger. You'll only ever find fresh beef that's really juicy and loaded with fresh toppings. So download the Wendy's app today. Check out the latest deals and order a burger that's only job is being delicious. You're welcome.
Very good. Let's get into so we're starting to see all the teams that were eliminated in the last week have their year-end press conferences. And I kind of pulled out a few of them that I think are really interesting comments from the players or GMs and just situationally. Some are great, some are funny, some are insightful, starting with Boston. And so Don Sweeney spoke, the GM, and he spoke pretty clearly about some of the Bruins offseason needs. And one of them he said was depth scoring, secondary scoring, speed. He wants to pick up on the forechecking. He's not satisfied with the Bruins' ability to do that. And I think a lot of it had to do with speed. You know, you're not getting a great forechecking going when you got Maroon and JVR and guys like that in the lineup. And he also was asked about DeBrusk, and he said negotiations are a two-way street. He said they took an aggressive approach with him. This is reported by Ty Anderson, who's one of the Bruins guys. And he clarified, someone said, are taking or took? And he said took, which means I don't think they're at a little bit of an impasse. And I think, you know, DeBrusk is looking for who knows what, you know, maybe $6 million over 6 years or something. And
let that guy walk.
I know. And I want him back for the right deal because he is a guy that shows up in the playoffs. He's also like the known commodity. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're getting from him, as frustrating as it is. You want more. At least you know what it is. But it doesn't sound like they're close based on this comment. So he could be hitting the open market.
This guy has been nothing but a thorn in your side since he entered the league in 2017-2018. Inconsistent, but incredible at times. Get rid of him. 7 years he's been on your team, Tim, the Boston Bruins. 7 years. He goes from getting, you know, 14 points in a lockout-shortened season in 41 games, which is atrocious, to 50 last year and 64, 2 years ago. For him, because this year's done. It's frustrating with this guy. Healthy scratched. Begging to be traded. Trade me. I don't like the coaches. Get rid of him. What are we doing here? Even just attempting to sign him. I don't understand the reasoning. This guy's nothing but issues on your team. Always, you always want more. He never gives it to you. Frustrating to no end, but he's a UFA. I get it. You want to maybe get something for him. You should have traded him at the deadline. He's going to walk. You have to let him walk. I think the hard line, what they did is, here's it. $4 million. 6 years. Take it or leave it. That's what I think they probably did. He's like, no. We want more. We want to have more. Our last contract was $4 million. We're not going to match that. We want $6 million. No, kick rocks. There's better players we can get for $6 million. Jake DeBrusk. Guys who show up every day and want to be here. This is not a guy you win a Stanley Cup with, Tim. It's not. He's not. You can't rely on him. So let him walk, Don Sweeney. Don't give in. Let him go. You'll be a better team for it. All right. What are they saying in Colorado?
Yeah, obviously the big thing with Colorado was Nichushkin and Landeskog.
Nose candy.
Those are the two stories. So Landeskog first basically said he's not played the whole season. Obviously the last game he played was when he won the cup, which is kind of weird.
Do you
want to
build
a
snowman?
We're talking about Landeskog now. And so still no timetable for his return. He is not retiring. There was some speculation that he was going to announce that, but he's hoping to get back this year, this coming season. We'll see. Then the GM, Chris McFarland, was asked about Nichushkin's contract, whether he was going to terminate it. He said that at this point, that's not an option. Well, that's not an option. So I don't know if that means they legally can't or whatever they're trying to say, not sure. But he did say that rebuilding that trust will be difficult, which I think is, it says a lot.
Yeah, he's a great player, so they'll give him another chance.
You think so?
Yeah, he's such a good player. I hope they don't, but I think they will.
Even Landeskog, who's the captain, said, we'll see how Vel handles the situation, how the next 6 months go, whether he'd be welcome back into that locker room or not. So, I don't know. Listen, I think he's played his last game for the Avalanche.
He makes $6 million. That's a good value for a player of his talent. And he signed through, what is he signed for another 6 years?
You can get Jake DeBrusk for that money.
Oh, geez. Jake is such a waste of space. But back to Landeskog, that's too bad. You know, there's some guys you just really, truly have empathy for because he's just done all the right things. He plays the right way, and he's just a very, very solid player. I don't know him personally. He just seems like he's a good human, and he just can't catch a break, and that's Gabe Landeskog. I know he won a Stanley Cup, but injured, healing, injured again, setbacks, this and that, so... Yeah, gosh, if he has to retire because of this, it'll be really, really too bad for him because he's put up a really good career. You know, lots of talent, but he puts in the work. Never the best player on your team, but just oozes leadership. I like Gabe Landeskog. Hopefully he can come back, but it doesn't sound promising. It does not sound promising for him. All right, let's go to the Canucks.
Yeah, the last one I wanted to touch on here. First, Pettersson. Well, there's a few interesting things with the Canucks because even like Hronek was asked if he was hurt, and he's like, no, even though that goal he scored in game 7 was his first one-timer attempt in like 2 weeks or something. Like something's going on with him. Pettersson said he's been playing with a bad knee since January and that it kept getting worse the more he played. So, and he basically did own up the fact that he's been terrible by his standards for a while now, which I thought was interesting. And then Zadorov is just great. He had like
he's
all
so
these
funny
one-liner gems. And he basically asked, like, you played so well. You're a free agent. Have you priced yourself out of being able to return to this team given the cap situation and how strong you played in the playoffs? And he goes in his Russian accent, how much do you think I should make? I don't know where you're getting those numbers. The trees? You got to stop listening to Edmonton reporters.
It's great. So funny.
Really. And he also dumped on Alberta too, that they weren't even the best team in Calgary wasn't even the best team in Alberta, which is great. He's the gem.
He's a national treasure from Russia. We got to get him back on the show. He was so good. But yeah, I don't know. You knew something was wrong with Pettersson. Mickey, he's too good to be playing like that. So maybe they should have gotten surgery in January. Whatever the ailment is, it sounds like either a meniscus that's getting worse and worse because that would get worse or who knows. But because a meniscus you can play with. That's too bad. All right, let's do some quick hits, Tim, and get out of here. Sheldon Keefe found a new home. Didn't take long. He just now signed on to be the head coach of the Dallas or New Jersey Devils. Is that good for the Devils? You like, you're a Jack Hughes guy. You got a tattoo of him on your hip. Is he going to enjoy Sheldon Keefe?
I think so. I mean, the Leafs players tended to like him. I was reading about Wyshynski basically pointed out that Keefe is not a culture builder. That's not his style. It's intentionally not. Like, it's not just he's not capable of it. He just doesn't do it. He lets the players build it and figure it out together, and even the young guys. So I don't know that. Is he the guy to take the Devils to the next level when they haven't really reached that? I don't know. We'll find out. But he's probably the best coach available, right? So
I don't know if I agree with his way of doing things because the coach should be a huge part of the culture.
Right.
You maintain the culture because you're the coach. So you should have a say in how it works and how it runs. I'm looking at this roster now for the Devils. It's like who's driving the ship here? Is it their captain, Hirschire? I don't think so. Is it Pilat? He's won a Stanley Cup in Tampa Bay. Who sets the bar on this team? You know, who's the sheriff if things go astray or askew? Who's going to right the ship? Every team should have 2 to 3 or 4 guys on a leadership group to say, this is how we're, you know, this is how we play. This is how we are. This is our culture. It's not Timo Meier. I don't think it's Jack Hughes. Not Jesper Bratt. These are their high-profile guys. So I disagree with Keefe when he says he lets the players, you know, dictate the culture and the locker room and how things run. Maybe it's Dougie.
I think it's Jack. Oh, Tim, of course you do. Oh, classic. You got his tattoo on his forehead.
You think Jack Hughes, based on what you've seen off camera, on camera, off ice, his personality, is the guy that you want to call people out to lead just the locker room. You think that's the player that you want? He's incredible on the ice. I'm not saying that.
Yeah. But going back to, like, you know, when he first came into the league, everything was all about how well-spoken he was, how much of a leader he was, how much of an adult he was at a young age. And I think he's got the maturity. I think he's got the confidence and swagger. We know he has those things.
Yes.
And I think he's got the respect of his teammates. I don't know that he's, speak up and lead by, dictating to other guys what he wants them to do. Maybe he's an example guy, but I think he's capable. And he's still only, 21, 22?
23.
Like I like him for that role more than anyone else. Who else is going to do it? Like you said,
nobody. That's the problem. The coach needs to do that. So I just don't see it. He's not even 6 foot. Okay. The next one here, Jim Hiller, interim tag ripped off. He is now the head coach of the LA Kings. Seems like an easy choice. He came in, did okay. Did terrible in the playoffs. They lost 4-1 to the Edmonton Oilers. So really, really not excelling in the playoffs. So it was a little strange. I think maybe they kicked the tires on a few other coaches. Not a lot of takers. And they have named him the head coach of the LA Kings. So good for Jim Hiller. It's a very easy, soft decision. You're not really going out on a limb. All right. Speaking of coaches, Vancouver's Rick Tocchet, coach of the year. Good for him. He did a hell of a job. He really did. Good coach. It's amazing when you just tell the truth and you put the best players out there. Hold them accountable. It's a novel idea. Good for Rick Tocchet. I think he deserved it. Anything else, Tim?
No, that's it. That's it. Long weekend coming up for the U.S.
Yes, happy Memorial Day. Well, we might squeak in a show on Monday. We got to talk. But yeah, watch some hockey tonight. Very good. A couple game twos tonight, tomorrow night. We'll check in on Monday. And I know you guys want to know what we thought. So we'll talk to you on Monday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.